Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Welcome to another episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio. I am Dr. Jake Porter. I'm glad that you are here with us once again. I'm really excited for our show today. APSATS is a wonderful organization that is committed to training professionals to come alongside those who are suffering from the consequences of betrayal trauma and find healing and hope and restoration. And today we have the pleasure of being joined by one of those professionals. Based out of Central Florida, Tiffany Comiskey is a partner coach certified by APSATS. She's a professional who uses a gentle yet effective approach to tackle the emotional and physical pain of betrayal trauma and or abuse, and is an expert at providing much needed support and tools in an empathic way to those who desperately need it. Having survived childhood and adult compound trauma herself, she understands the frustration of trying to find a professional to help navigate through the pain when they just don't seem to understand. Tiffany believes that finding a professional who is specifically trained and certified in betrayal trauma is the key to proper healing. Tiffany's coaching style is derived from the International Coaching Federation, in which she allows her clients space to be able to discover their gifts on their own and then guide them to having the tools and confidence they need to overcome betrayal. In this conversation, we're going to talk a lot about the stages of healing and restoration for betrayed partners based on the multidimensional partner trauma model of APSATS. And so if you're listening today, especially if you're a coach, you're a therapist, or you're someone who is a religious leader, check out the many trainings that APSATS offers at APSATS.org, particularly the multidimensional partner trauma model training. So you're going to get exposed to some ideas from that model in this conversation that I have with Tiffany. And if you want to go deeper, I cannot highlight to you enough how valuable that 4-day training would be. All right. Enough of that. I can't wait for you to hear and get to know Tiffany. Well, hello, Tiffany. How are you?
Hi, Jake. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm so happy that you're joining us here on Betrayal Recovery Radio. Yeah. And before we get into anything too formal here, I want to just, you know, I've already introduced you formally, but I want to let folks know that this is a very special guest. This is Miss Lawrence, Kansas, 1995. Right here before our very eyes or ears, depending on whether you're doing the video.
I'm blushing.
Yeah. And not only that, but the runner up in the Miss Kansas USA pageant, right?
Right. Yeah. That's me.
Yeah. Do you consider those your glory days or something you're trying to run from?
Oh, Jake. A little of both.
I understand that. I just turned 40. So I'm understanding that looking back at, do I want to run from it or
It was a great experience. I learned a lot from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to make sure all of our listeners knew just who we had here today. No, but you're a partner coach. You work with betrayed partners. You also work with couples. And today you're going to share some of your thoughts about this recovery process for betrayed partners, but also for the coupleship, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. What do you hope people take away? I'm going to kind of start at the end here. What do you hope people take away from listening today?
Well, the name of my business is HOPE, and the acronym is healing is optimal through personal empowerment. And so I love the word HOPE because I feel like, usually when I see a partner, or sometimes I'll see the addict first, they're coming to me for hope. They want a plan. They're usually pretty lost. I don't know what to do. I don't know if I want this or that. And so when I see one or the other, or sometimes both at the same time, I really try to instill some hope by just formulating a plan with them so that they know, okay, now I know I'm not just kind of floundering all over the place. So trying to keep them centered and focused on that plan going forward through assessing them and changing it and just kind of working with them individually, trying to figure out what the best plan is really my goal towards getting them into total healing. So I'm all about the plan the first session and helping them feel hopeful that they at least are centered for that hour and a half that we're together. So Yeah.
That's so great. That resonates with my experience as well. You have someone walk in, their world's just blown up, right? And just having a plan, even understanding that there is a process, that there's a destination that they can maybe get to, you know, it's like it orients them to what's happening a little bit, right?
Yeah. And they feel so lonely when they come in. They typically don't have a big support system. They haven't really spoken to anybody who really gets it and gets them. So they come in very lonely and confused. And usually they leave here feeling like, okay, there's some kind of hope that we actually know what we're going to do now. So yeah, absolutely, Jake.
Yeah. So let's kind of dive into that and start by, you know, there's an assumption there. If there's a plan, that means that there's a process, that there's an end. So what does the timeline of recovery for a betrayed partner really look like?
You know, that's usually one of the first questions that I get is, how long am I going to hurt like this? How long is this going to take for me to feel like myself again? How long is it going to take before I, you know whether or not my husband or wife is healthy enough? How long is that going to take? And my answer typically is everybody's different.
Yeah.
There is no timeline. And so that's why we are constantly adjusting the timeline as we go along. But typically, if I was to give an average, I would say probably, you know, 3 to 5 years on average is the recovery process, but some move on to that final phase of recovery quicker. Others, it takes a little bit longer. And I think a lot of it has to do with how the couple is healing during the process. So it's always just different.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That 3 to 5 years, back when I first started working in this field, I mean, that's what I was told back then. And I do see that the exception being exactly what you said. If the coupleship is really being cared for and worked on, it does seem to maybe compress the timeline a bit.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what might that initial plan look like for a betrayed partner?
Okay. So with the partner, when they come in, the first thing I do is, besides greeting them, is to find out what their story is and find out, like you were just saying, what's going on with the husband or the wife. I'm going to say husband just to make it easier. But I have partners who are males and it's the wife that we're talking about. Just to make it easy, I'm going to say husband.
Sure.
But the husband I'll ask about the husband and whether or not, you know, he is even aware that she's speaking to me. How much work is he doing? Is he even, has he been diagnosed as a sex addict? Are we talking about an integrity issue? And just try to figure out what the story is. And then immediately from then, first session, I'm doing a lot of talking about the plan and how that can look. I ask questions about whether or not she wants to move forward in the relationship. And having said that, there is no pressure. I let her know You do not have to make that decision today. Taking the pressure off. No pressure there. But is there a part of you, you're here today because you're hurting? If we could get him healthy, is there a part of you that wants to work on the coupleship with him? Just a little bit of a buy-in there. If she says yes, and usually it's yes, then we're making a plan for the whole thing. And that looks like, number one, I do two safety plans, sort of. The first one is to make an immediate safety plan, which could include, STD testing. It could be, call an attorney to find out what your rights are in case this doesn't happen, figure it out now. So you're not, in the middle of the moment, right, and you're trying to heal and you're figuring that out. Maybe you, need to have another credit card with just your name on it. Make sure that you have a plan of some place to go if something were to happen. And just kind of a safety plan there. And then we talk about making sort of a recovery plan. And a recovery plan is A to Z. What are we going to do? First thing I do in that recovery plan is make a safety plan for the partner. So not the initial safety plan, immediate safety plan, but this is ongoing. So just like a recovery plan, if anybody's familiar with a recovery plan for an addict, they do the circles, red,
right,
yellow, green circles, outer circle, middle circle. Yes. I do the same thing, but it's more of a stoplight, red, yellow, green. Red is, these are my conditions. If he does this, I can't, we're separating at the very least. He can't continue to hurt me and act out this way. And she gets to write that. Yellow is, here's what I need from him for him to do to stay safe. So maybe that includes a GPS tracker. Maybe it includes calling her whenever he goes from point A to point B, checking in constantly, getting into recovery, all of that. So what do you need to feel safe? And there's no limits on it. And I tell her, no limits on what you need to feel safe. Even I don't want you to say, well, I want to put that on there, but I know he'll never do it. Well, let's just start with the max. And then we can dwindle it down if we need to, but let's just start with, what do you think on a day-to-day basis, if you were going to stay in this marriage, what would that look like? And that's the biggest part of her safety plan. And then the third part is her green. What does she expect for the relationship, for him to do to stay healthy? And usually the green is very simple. It's the basics. Therapy, of course. joining a support group, 12 steps. She wants to see him doing active recovery work. She needs that to feel safe. She needs to see him doing something to get healthy. Because a lot of times the husband or the addict will say, I can do this on my own. I know what I'm doing. I don't need any help. I've got this. And she's heard it before, usually. Okay. Yeah, you got this. How's that working for you? No. So she needs to know and see that he's actually doing the work. So that's the safety plan that we do. We do that day one. That's their homework, is to figure out what you need to feel safe.
And so if you are getting that pushback from a partner, and she's saying, look, I've made these requests before. I've asked him this before. I've told him I need this before. Why do you want me to write it down? Why do I need to write it down now? I just really don't think he's going to do it.
Were you sitting in my session yesterday with me? literally had a session yesterday.
Why should I have to do this if I know that he's not going to respect it or respond?
That's so funny. So next part of safety, boundaries.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We jump into boundaries pretty darn quick.
Okay.
And that is where your boundary is, obviously, you can't make him do anything. You can't say, you're going to do this.
Right.
You can't force him, but you can take care of yourself. And so we work a lot on that self-worth. You're worth having a man with integrity. you're worth having a husband who loves you and only has eyes for you and respects you, right? Right? Isn't that what you want? Yeah, that's what I want. We work on that a lot, but then, okay, well, if you have this boundary of this is what I want and this is what I need to feel safe, you have a choice, husband. You can either come on board with me, I'm going to get healthy regardless, or you're going to have to just continue the way you are, but I'm not going to be with you. And so putting in that strong boundary right up front is really sometimes the biggest obstacle that I run right. into, because she's scared.
Right.
And so giving her that sense of empowerment, hope healing is optimal through personal empowerment. I could spend a whole nother day talking about that. But giving her that sense of empowerment, like, you do have a voice here. You do have the right. You just have been, you've kind of been pushed out and made to feel scared. And it's intentional usually, because he is struggling with an addiction. So then I will say, the very next session, if he's up for it, this was my session yesterday that I had, brand new girl. I said, you know, bring him in. Let's have a couple session right now. Let's do it. Let's get it on the books. Bring him in. And I'm going to ask him, do you want to stay in this marriage? And he'll say, well, yeah, of course I do. Great. Because he's already agreed to come. So you know that, you know, he's in.
Sure.
And I'll be the bad guy. I'll say, well, she's got this safety list. And are you willing to do whatever it takes to help her feel safe and help her heal? Of course I want her to heal. Of course I want her to move on. Of course I want to be together and be happy. Okay, well, here's the safety plan. Here's what we have to do in order for her to feel safe. And I get his buy-in. I'll do most of the work so that she's like, okay, I've got somebody on my team, so to speak, but not just on my team, but the team of the couple. I'm there to help the couple. I want that couple to stay together. That's my passion. I really, really want that, because I know it can happen. So yeah, that's what I do to kind of get her over that fear. And sometimes it might take a while for her to really feel confident enough. But yeah, we work on that pretty quick.
So what if, because I'm sure you've seen this before, I know I've seen this in my office. Okay, that addicted partner does show up and he's there, but he's not super willing. He is being more resistant. Maybe he's questioning, am I really an addict? I don't know that I'm an addict. Or maybe he's even, you know, blaming his wife or the betrayed partner. What about in those situations where it's not just so nice and neat and tidy, yeah, like that first scenario, which it does happen that way. It does.
Yeah. You have the extremes, right? You have the ones where they're like, I just want to keep her. I'll do anything. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. I'm an addict. I'll do it. Whatever you want. Yeah. The ones that I see that are what you were describing are usually the ones that do really, really well in recovery eventually. And those are the ones that are kind of like, they surprise me sometimes, because once that light bulb goes off and they're like, oh, I am an addict. This recovery stuff is great. I really, really, I'm feeling so much better. I don't want to go back to that. Then they are the ones that typically, you know, we have the roller coaster ride that we go on. She's up here for a while, he's down here, and then they go like this. They're hardly ever this way, but they're kind of going back and forth. Sometimes I'll see him go, woo, I'm doing great. And she's like, wait a minute, wait for me. Hold on a second. So they're challenging at first, but sometimes the challenging ones are the ones that surprise me the most. So anyway, having said that, yes. If they are coming in and they're like, yeah, addict, I am not the A word. I am not an SA. No, no way. I don't want that label. Forget it. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not going to be the one to diagnose you with that. However, you have to admit there's a problem. If it's hurting other people around you, at least admit it's a problem. And if you want your wife to feel safe, and she doesn't, we'll just speak about porn addiction. If she doesn't want you to look at porn, she doesn't like it. She feels uncomfortable. She feels objectified and and doesn't feel like you have only eyes for her. And it's, she's feeling all of that. And you don't want her to feel that way, I'm sure. Then let's look at this. Let's see if you can, if you can stop, that's great. But it would be a lot easier to stop if you had some help. So she's asking, and I am asking, in order for us to stay on the same page here in recovery, that you make an appointment with the certified sex addiction therapist. Find a CSAT. I've got some referrals. I can refer you here locally. I've got some all over the country that I can refer you to that I've worked with personally, or you can find one on your own. But you need to find a therapist that can help you with this. And let's just see what that therapist says about whether or not this is an addiction or not. And of course, the therapist is going to say, yep, it's an addiction. And let's get to work. And then from that point on, at least in the beginning, I put a lot of emphasis on the partner. Come on. You know, sometimes it just takes that little side door, not the back door action, but the side door coming in the side. She's hurting over here. Don't you want to make her feel better? You're the one that's hurting her. You want her to feel better. So let's look at this. And then once I get them with the CSAT, that CSAT can turn it around and really make him feel like he's being heard and really being listened to and figuring out, okay, well, maybe I do have a problem. And then it's in the CSAT's hands to work with him on that problem. So They might fight me a little bit, but then when I bring the partner in and how much her pain is so significant and she can't take it much longer. And I'll also flat out say, I'm going to be working with your wife. We're going to be working together every week. She's going to get stronger. Her voice is going to get stronger. She's going to be empowered. Her sense of self is coming back. And she's going to get to a point where what you're doing, which is nothing, isn't going to be enough for her. So you need to step on board and get on the same page as her if you want to make sure that this marriage stays intact. So that's how I go about it.
That's great. So I'm imagining we've got listeners right now, we've got a betrayed partner listening to this going, that sounds really great. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they've kind of given up. Maybe they've tried to engage the husband or the betraying partner, whether it's a husband or a wife, whoever. They've tried to engage that person. They've said no. They've been resistant. They're hearing you and they're like, okay, I'm going to try this again. I'm going to try this one more time. What's the best way that a betrayed partner can try to get the addict to listen and to actually buy into the healing process or give it a shot?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This sounds really simple, but for me, I feel like good old fashioned truth, honesty, and being humble for her and saying, I can't live like this anymore. I love you, husband. I want to be in this marriage, but I'm not happy. I don't feel good like this. I know that you're not happy. So we're at a point now where we need to make a decision before we can move forward. And like I was saying before, the whole buy-in is all about her having boundaries and saying, I've had enough. I can't live like this anymore. You need to get healthy or I'm probably going to leave you. Yeah. So it takes strong boundaries. And I do have many clients in the past who have been in that same situation. And it just takes us a little bit longer because I kind of have to start from that. Remember I was saying I have to adapt to each client and adjust that plan. We may have a very rigorous plan set up. And then once we're in it, we got to be a little bit more conservative and pull back a little bit and kind of just focus on her. I have a client right now who I'm working with and she's amazing, super strong, and almost to the point where she was so strong and, you know, they get angry. They partners can get angry. The stuff that I hear here in this office.
Sure. Yeah.
We get some anger here.
It's
so
worth getting angry about.
There's a lot to be angry about. And because of the shame that the addict is holding in, it's sometimes really hard for them to take. most of the time it's hard. 99% of the time, it's hard for them to take that anger when they're first in here. So that's where the job of the CSAT comes in, to help them with their shame, to help them put on a, you know, you got to put on a shield right now because she's angry and rightfully so. But you need to remember that you're in recovery and you're the man, you're working towards being the man that she wants. So, but right now she's angry and she's hurt. But I back to the story, this gentleman was so nice when he came in. A lot of times they're just the sweetest things. Next thing I know, he's like, nope, I'm out. I can't do this empathy thing. We were working on empathy as a couple. I'm gonna move out and I'm gonna work on myself. And honey, you can just work on yourself and we'll come back together in a couple months and everything will be fine. That's what his thought was.
No.
I was like, no, you don't understand. This isn't going to work. So of course she's like, well, I don't have a choice. She's working on herself. We're focusing just on her. We had to totally alter that plan from going couples. Yeah. Yeah. Rah, rah. We're all in this. He's doing fine, to no, this is too much for me. I can't take the shame bombing and the, you know, all of that. So he was out. So we just changed it. Altered it, focuses on her. And he started to see a change. And he got scared. He thought she was going to come back in a couple months. Well, guess what? She's like, I don't know if I want to come back now. And guess what he did? Hello, CSAT? Can you see me? Can you hear me? I really need to get an appointment as soon as possible. 12-step meeting. I need a sponsor. Can somebody get me a sponsor? I really need a sponsor. I mean, 100%.
This highlights something that I don't know. I don't want to mount a soapbox here, but you're preaching something, you know, I want to just give an amen. So I love that story because it highlights the power that this partner had, but that could not be realized until she stepped into it, until she took action, right? I get, you know, earlier you were talking about how early on you will do some of the, you'll kind of mediate a little bit between, and I get that early on, you know, when it's the first session, first couple of sessions, but at some point, one of my wants for betrayed partners, I want them to realize they get to make choices that are incredibly powerful, that are going to have an effect on themselves and their partners. And no one else could have done what she did to bring about that effect on that man.
Yes.
But it took a lot of courage on her part. It's scary to use your voice and step into your power and your strength.
Yes. Yeah.
But no one else can do it. No one else can do that for you.
And it really helps to find an APSATS trained or APSATS certified therapist or coach that can hold your hand through it, because it's scary. It's scary. So if you have somebody that is there to help hold your hand, help you through it, telling you that, yep, you're doing the right thing, you're going to be okay, you're going to be okay. That really helps. It is rare, in my opinion, it is rare to see somebody do this on their own without eventually going, okay, I'm either going to cut all ties, never, we're done, we're divorced, or I'm just going to go back to the way things were because I'm scared and I don't want to be alone. It's hard to do. It's hard to have that strength when you don't have somebody kind of in your corner rooting you on and kind of, you know, challenging you and pushing you. So I can't emphasize enough how important it is to have somebody who's trained on how to do that, because you really, really need it. I'm speaking from experience. So personal experience. So,
Well, that's so, so key. I mean, if you're listening to this, if you get nothing else, and I know you're getting a lot more than that, but that's so huge to get that message that you have power in your voice.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We just have to find the power sometimes. It's in there.
It's in there. It's in there. And then muster up that courage and move forward and watch things happen.
Amen.
Watch things happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do want to kind of go back to us talking about this sort of timeline or this plan, this process mm-hmm. that's there. And you started out talking a whole lot about safety. And in fact, we know in the multidimensional partner trauma model that APSATS teaches and trains coaches and therapists mm-hmm. in, there are three phases. And that first phase is about safety and stability, right? After that blow up. Yeah. And then comes after that, the, you know, mourning and grieving and working mm-hmm. through, you know, this meaning making process about what's happened.
Yeah.
But so often folks have a hard time getting there to that second phase.
Yeah.
And so if we go back to the model, well, there must be something wrong in the safety area. Yeah. And you've said that often, when a partner lacks safety, it's probably one reason could be because there's a lack of empathy being exchanged in the relationship. Can you speak to the power of empathy for providing safety?
Okay. How much time do we have?
We got time.
That's a huge topic. Like I said in the beginning, I'll have a partner who can move through that first phase quickly. Somewhat quickly, of course, there's a lot of healing that has to be done. Safety and stabilization phase is so important. You can't skip as much as we all want to. You can't skip it.
No.
So, and then you have the partner who is having to figure it out on their own because there really is no empathy coming from their partner. And so they get kind of stuck in that safety and stabilization phase. So with empathy, ERCOM, which is early recovery empathy couples model, or they said it backwards, early recovery,
couples empathy model.
ERCOM. Yeah, which I'm certified in.
Yes.
Yay, great program. So with that, with APSATS, you learn how to kind of teach the partner what empathy looks like, that hopefully it kind of translates to him. But in my early experience as a coach, I remember saying, how am I going to do this without getting him involved? Like I have to get him involved. I've got to talk to him about empathy. Yeah. I need to teach him. Because that was before ERCOM. It was like, how do you do this without teaching him what she's feeling and taking the information that I've learned and I've experienced and giving it to him? Here's your gift. Here's what it is. Now let's have a plan. How do you deal with that? Let's talk about it. And so when I get to work with the husbands, or if there's another, if he's got a CSAT who's works with couples and understands it as well as an APSATS and all that, whoever's working with him really needs to start day one with that empathy coaching. You may not be doing a lot of couples work. I do couples work later with communication and all of that and intimacy, rebuilding intimacy up, but you can't get through that. You can't get to that part without the empathy, because she needs to feel safe with that. So if you're not moving through that phase, I hate the word quick, because it's not never ever quick, but you're moving that through that phase and you're feeling stuck. 9 times out of 10, when we look in at the whole picture, it's because you're not getting the support you need from your spouse. And I tell the spouse all the time, I tell the addict, I'll say, you don't realize how much power you have in healing.
That's
If you could learn how to show this empathy without letting the shame get in the way, which the shame, is a sin. The shame is holding you back from being all in and helping her. It's kind of a selfish thing. You need to put the shame aside. You can deal with that later and jump in to her pain. What she needs right now is to know that she's not all alone, and she wants to know that you get it. And so you need to learn how to get in there with her pain and not run from it. no more of this. I'm going to go over here, like my couple did. I'm going to go over here and heal for a little bit. And you go over here and heal for a little bit. I'm not going to show you empathy, but call me in a couple months when you're all done healing in a couple months. Literally, yeah. He thought it would be a couple months. You're done. We'll get back together. Whatever. Literally thought that. As soon as he realized this isn't working, guess what he did? He, like I said, he picked up the phone. He made these appointments. Right. But the other thing he did, he got Carol Sheets' book, Help Her Heal. He bought the book, which I told him to buy ages ago. Wouldn't buy it, wouldn't look at it. Was doing the homework, was making appointments with me to learn how to show her empathy. And now they're doing great. They're moving. I mean, they're in the second phase of healing through this. They made it past that first phase, but they did it together. And that's what made it go from taking a year in the first phase to just a few months in that first couple months. Not even. So,
that is so, so great because so a lot of my research was in like the neurobiology of relationships and emotions and all that stuff. And what you're describing is, I just want people to know, like, this is backed up by science. These aren't just stories or anecdotes. Like, this is a real thing, that there's something that happens in our nervous systems when someone is attuned to us and we can exchange emotion with them and feel with them. There's something incredibly healing for attachment ruptures in that way. And I just want to, I want to echo that when there's something missing, it's often maybe the addicted partner cognitively gets it, you know, cognitively says the right things, but that betrayed partner's like, I don't think he doesn't understand. He doesn't feel it. He doesn't understand. If we can just help them actually exchange emotion in an empathetic way, that's a game changer.
It's a game changer. I do exercises here. A couple of them are from you that I stole along the way.
Please. I probably stole them from someone else too.
I do a couple exercises here about how do you actively listen to what she's saying and how she's hurting. And when was the first time that you possibly have felt that kind of emotion? What did that feel like? Maybe it's not the same thing, not the same action, and it's probably not as intense. It might be, but I pretty much can guarantee that everybody's had some kind of betrayal or hurt or something, abuse or something in their childhood or growing up that they can kind of grab onto and go, okay, well, I understand that feeling. I get it. Okay. Yeah. And I'll tell you, I was kind of chuckling because you were saying that, they come across sometimes as I'm going to put words in your mouth, but I think I heard you say, that sometimes they'll come across as kind of rehearsed. Like, you don't understand. Sure. I hear the words. Right. I know that those came right out of Carol Sheets' book.
Right.
I read them myself.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not, really feeling it. And usually I tell the partner, I'll say, you know, in the beginning, if that's what we can get, let him do it. It's something. Yeah. It's good. And accept it. And you have permission to accept that empathy. Even if it sounds like it's coming from a book, just for, you know, the sake of healing, and you getting something out of this and knowing that he's trying, it's okay to accept that empathy.
Right.
It's okay if it sounds like it's coming in from a book, because guess what? He's never done this before.
That's right.
He's learning from scratch. So he had to pick it up somewhere. And that's where you start. When you're learning something new, there's a lot of memorizing. There's a lot of fake it till you make it. And then eventually when you're in the healing process and, you know, that healing process for him, you have a really good graph that I love that talks about the different phases for him and her and then the couple. Right. They're all about the same in the beginning. There's still shock and you know, a lot of stuff that goes on with him. His healing phase is where the magic happens, where the fog lifts, where he does actually feel it. It's not just words, where he can express it with his heart. But in the beginning, it may not come across that way. And I ask my partners, just be patient. I know I'm asking for a lot here because you've been patient for so long. but this is part of the process. And it's just, sometimes it doesn't come naturally for them.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. It's takes a while to build that capacity.
Yeah. That's the way to put it.
Right. So I want to go back to one thing you said earlier. You talked about shame getting in the way for a lot of addicted partners, right? So they're not able to show up for their their partners, their betrayed partners, because, you know, their own stuff comes up. How do you help addicts move from, you know, from that place of shame to actually lean in and be present with their partners?
Yeah. So, When I was in IRCM and I was in training, one of the things I received was this list, 7 principles of conflict for the addict. And the gist of it, if I'm going to paraphrase, the whole thing is about shame. Most of it is about shame. And when an addict is rightfully so, and it's a tough thing to admit to and own and hear over and over from your partner about how much you hurt them. It hurts. You wish you could take it back. When you're healing, you're like, I wish I wasn't like that. I should have got help a long time ago. Right. But you can't help but feel shame for it. I mean, we're human. Of course, there's going to be some emotion there. So what I always tell them is, listen, we're talking about her healing right now. We're talking about her. When you are feeling, when she's angry or when she's triggered, when she's hurting, the best thing you can do is be present for her. The best thing you can do is, I'm going to steal this from Carol, spray on a Teflon coating, or I like to say, I'll use a shield. Let's put on a shield, hold that shield up. And any of that shame coming through has to bounce off. And the whole time you're telling yourself, this is not who I am anymore. I'm not what I was. I'm not my past. I am working towards integrity, healthy. I'm working towards being a man that is present for my wife and my children and my family and the people I work with and my friends. I'm working towards that. I am not that person. But she's still stuck in the past. So just like with triggers, they're all about the past. Triggers are all about the past. So triggers or intrusive thoughts or just, you know, anger, all of that that she's feeling, especially in the beginning, it spreads out and gets, you know, longer later, it's different later, but in the beginning it's constant. If he can remember to put the shame in a little ball, close the lid, put it up on a shelf, go back to that later, talk to your sponsor, your therapist, whoever it is later. Right. But for right now, you need to get in, you need to dig in and you got to be strong. You got to be strong and go in there and know that, okay, I'm in here for her. This isn't about me and my shame. This is all about my wife. It's the very least I can do is to help her through this because she's hurting. I am not going to be defensive. I'm not going to make up excuses. I'm not going to tell her to get over it. I've heard that before. When is she going to get better? It's been 3 months. Why is she still doing what? No. So he has to bottle that up, put it on a shelf, dig in, go in, be in the pain with her. I look at it like as if she's fallen into a ditch. And how is she going to get out? You could throw a rope down in there and hope she grabs it. But what if her arms are broken? What if she can't get it? So what's the best way to get her out? You jump in the ditch with her, with a rope.
That's right.
But you jump in the ditch with her. You get her situated and stable while you're in the pain with her. You have to get in there with her. It's not going to work. And then how do you pull her out? With empathy, with love, understanding, with validation, acknowledging, validating. And the whole time you're pulling her up, finally you're reassuring her. I'm not going anywhere. I'm working hard on my recovery. I don't want to be that person anymore. That was me in the past. You're going into the past, but you're bringing her through validation and reassurance. You're bringing her into the future.
Mm, what a great image. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And if you are the the betraying partner, the addicted partner, and you're listening to this, take heart there. And what Tiffany's saying is so important, especially the piece about what you're saying to yourself, right? Mm-hmm. When you're trying to stay present, your internal script, I call it the internal attaboy. Give yourself permission to say, this is hard, but I'm doing it. Hey, I'm showing up right now as the husband I want to be, the man I want to be, the woman I want to be, the person, the human I want to be. I'm being kind. I'm being give yourself that internal attaboy, because it reinforces that behavior in the future. And that is what helps you endure through it. Yes. You actually get dopamine when you tell yourself.
Yes. That. I was going to say that was on the tip of my tongue. And when you said endure, you want to build that empathy muscle.
Right.
And when you don't have it to begin with, it hurts. Just like when you work out, when you exercise,
that's right.
You're sore the next day, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean you give up. You just do it more. And right. eventually when you've exposed yourself to the pain that your partner is feeling and you're not afraid of it, it gets easier to jump in the pain with her. That's and guess right. what happens then? Her triggers are shorter. They're not as drawn out. She begins to heal. The hippocampus begins to plump back up. She's feeling better. She's, you know, not scared. The amygdala in the brain is not going warning, 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 because she feels safe.
Right.
And it's all because of that empathy. It's huge. It's huge.
It is. It's huge. Wow. Okay. So very quickly, first steps for a partner listening right now.
What call me.
They're like, okay. And how can people get you?
Okay. You can either text. Texting is the quickest because I can respond in between clients real fast.
Okay.
That phone number is 407-815-3456. Or you can go to my website, which is Hope, HOPECFL, like Central Florida, HopeCFL.com. Okay. My bio is in there. Information about pricing, all of that is in there. Or you can just email me at Tiffany@HopeCFL.com.
All right. Tiffany, thank you. What a great, great conversation. I always love being with you.
Thanks, Jay.
You do incredible work. You really do. Thanks. So thank you for sharing your heart and your passion today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right, Jay. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSAT. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@apsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.